Hey there, loyal listeners. As you know, the Top Games podcast is made possible by Hardcore Gaming 101's Patreon supporters, who help keep this show alive by donating as little as $2 each month. If you were to join them in doing that, you would not only help keep the lights on at HG 101 Towers, you'd also get access to our super secret Patreon RSS feed, which is full of ad-free versions of this podcast with exclusive bonus game rankings. Here's a taste of what you've been missing. Hotline Miami. It's a great game. Doesn't really make a whole lot of sense, and it doesn't really matter because you're just some guy who like wakes up and gets weird messages on his answering machine, and then you go to weird places and you hit people with baseball bats and shoot people with a pig mask on
for really no reason, right?
No reason at all. No reason.
It's very willing to have that acid trip sort of.
Yeah, like personally, just speaking from experience, I've never like taken a bunch of crystal meth and shot a room full of people with a gun, but if I had, I feel like this would really be a good semblance of the experience. Go to patreon.com/HG101 and pledge a couple bucks. That's patreon.com/HG101. Act now and be a hero.
Yeah. Yeah. No. For some, this is painfully obvious, but hardcore gaming means it ain't for the novices. The main source to brain train your knowledge and lay maintain with a course saved in colleges. To HG 101, we give the honor. Thanks to Kirk, a lot of Xerxes to host it proper, as well as to Tanga, Cal, and Bobinator, Booker, Hart, and others. Discuss and discover all the 47,000 games, and when they rate them, you can bet it's scientifically locked in position. Speaking of which, no system is obscure. And look, they wrote a book about it. Go out and cop yours.
Hello and welcome to HardcoreGaming101.net's Top 47,858 Games of All Time podcast, where we objectively, definitively, and scientifically rank the games that you nominate. My name is Xerxes, and I'm the show's main host and producer, and on this podcast we have three rules. Rule 1, all rankings are final, official, and scientifically accurate. Rule 2, you can nominate one game at a time via 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher. Those are the ones we try to get to first. You can also go to bit.ly/rankthisplease and add a game to the slush pile and cross your fingers. We make no guarantees on those. Rule number 3, you can nominate games that have already been nominated, just don't nominate games you've already ranked. See the master list for yourself. It's at bit.ly/47kgames. That's bit.ly/47kgames.
Dogs. All right, we are at episode 144 of Hardcore Gaming 101's Top 47,858 Games of All Time podcast, and we are doing Famicom Detective Club 2. And this is a game for nominated to us by JC from San Francisco iTunes. Does San Francisco get its own iTunes? Is it really that hipster? I don't know. That's what I got written here. Don't ask me.
I'm just gonna say, like, hipster or not, it's definitely better than where you are.
Hey, I'm in Australia.
Exactly.
We're very patriotic here. Now it was developed, I believe, originally by Tosei, but we're gonna mostly be looking at the Nintendo R&D 1 version, because it was like a remake kind of the game, published by Nintendo, which is kind of interesting because it does make this one of the more sort of first-party violent-y games, because it is a game about death and violence and investigating crimes. Originally released for the Famicom Disk System, which means you never had a chance to play it, in 1989, exclusively in Japan, and then in 1998, in Japan again, on the Super Famicom. Although this time it used the Nintendo Power Cart, I think is the how they described it, and it was some like weird like flash memory cart or something that you loaded games onto, is my understanding.
It was sort of like the their version of what you could do on the Famicom Disk System, is that you'd take a cart and bring it to a like a store that had one of these things, and it would write a game on it after charging you so much money.
Which is great, because I mean, why not make this series the most difficult thing to get your hands on?
It could have been through the broadcast satellite.
That's even worse. Yeah, which the sequel to this game did.
Yes, the third game in the sequel is technically semi-lost, because it used the Satellavision, and although I think the versions of the game might be saved, it broadcast audio over the system as well, and that has not been recorded, to my knowledge. So, the voice acting or whatever was originally in the Satellite Vision version of the third game in the series, lost for all time, maybe. So, Nintendo don't really care about this franchise that much. They just kind of ditched it after this entry. Although it was like ported or whatever to the Game Boy Advance at one point. I think that's the last time we've heard about it. You've been hearing some voices here. I've been Carl. And who else is here to talk about Famicom Detective Club Part 2?
I'm Kurt Collada, Disco Alucard.
I am on the wind.
And I am the Little Puzzler.
And so this is a really cool, like, it's like a Japanese adventure game by Nintendo. And this one that we're going to mostly be talking about is the Super Famicom version. Is the original FDS version fan-translated? Because I know this one
was
fan-translated.
No. Nintendo actually did quite a number of adventure games, mostly because that was one of the big appeal of the Famicom Disk System. Like, Yoshihori and Enix's Portopia was the game that really started off the adventure game boom. And, like, almost every modern Japanese adventure game can be traced back to Portopia. The thing about that game is it was on a cartridge. There was no way to save the game. There wasn't even a password system. So as these games became more popular, there needed to be a way to save it. And at that point, they hadn't invented battery backup RAM yet. So that was the appeal of the Famicom Disk System. And this was some of the games, mostly adventure games, were actually two separate releases. So you would need to buy the first edition. You'd play it through. And then about one or two months later, the second edition came out, which you would also have to buy, and you would be able to start based off of that. That Famicom Detective Club was their Nintendo's attempt to do a Portopia-style game. They also had another subseries called the Famicom Mukashi Banashi, which is sort of like saying a long, long time ago. In English, they were sort of like folk tales that were given a goofy overhaul. And then there was also Time Twist, which is that game where you meet up with Abraham Lincoln and fight Hitler in interdimensional space who's possessed baby Jesus.
Also, there is a really deep, like, not detailed, but also looking at screenshots, there's a scene where a family gets lynched into the Civil War. So I would kill to see that game translated because that game looks like an utter nightmare.
It is crazy, that game. It is just totally bonkers. And, like, Nintendo has mostly disavowed the adventure games. Like, Famicom Detective Club 2 and Shin Onigashima, they got, I think, Nintendo Power, Super Famicom, enhanced upgrade versions. Everything else outside of, like, the GBA Famicom games, they've just, like, ignored.
There was something that when the Famicom turned 20, like around 2003, Enterbrain put out a DVD that one of the featurettes on there was they ran a poll that was what was Japan's top 100. Well, obviously it's Japan, it's the Famicom, but what are the top 100 Famicom games? I guess they did some survey. And Famicom Detective Club, both games were the only one of Nintendo's adventure games to even show up on that list. With Famicom Detective Club Part 2 being the one that was placed, higher, lower, depending upon how you're looking at it. But basically, they were rated better than the other ones. I can't remember, and I want to say that it was in the 30s, I believe. Although it was also weird that they did the first part and second part separately.
Oh, the first part and second part, they are different games, technically. Like, so Famicom Detective Club 1 and 2 are different games. It's just like when they release the discs, there's like the before version and after version. It's when they say like 1 and 2. So they are separate games. And I can sort of see that because the other games are very light and fluffy. Like they're silly. I know.
It's not silly.
This game is not silly.
No.
Like this game definitely took after Portopia. And that one of the reasons it's so well liked is it has very, very mature themes, especially for a Famicom game.
Yeah, if you didn't have, I guess, any access to, like, a PC-88 at the time, or any of the other, like, Japanese computers, this is, like, the only, like, really kind of, like, genuinely sort of serious adventure game, I think, that you would have even had, like, compared to everything else in the library. It's a cool game. So this is the sequel game that we are talking about, which is Famicom Forget it, I'm done with that. So it's a sequel, and it's actually a prequel. Is where I was going to eventually go with that. This is not a linear sequel. It is set before the original game. And I don't think that really matters that much to anyone because it's basically just wholly separate. And this is the only version that was given a remake. They didn't remake the first one or the third one, right? This is the only one that you can get on the Super Famicom.
That is correct.
And they did it probably because people like this one generally more than the first one.
So the first one is just set in like a mansion or whatever, isn't it? Like it's just like
it's basically, from what I remember of the plot, it is basically you are called to investigate the I can't remember if it was someone that thought that they were about to be killed or if they were someone or basically to investigate a death. But yeah, basically, you're called in to rescue that, except, it starts out actually where you're on a beach because you fell from a cliff and someone is like, someone is just waking up like, oh, hey, are you okay? And then basically you're trying to find out what happened on that cliff.
Classic amnesia storytelling that we all love so much.
There is also something funny about that because both this game and the both the Detective Club Part 2 and the original were written by Yoshio Sakamoto, so the guy who was kind of more famous for his involvement in the Metroid series, but he also worked on this. And I think there was an anecdote. The first, if you really want to see the first game, there's an episode of Game Center CX where Arino plays through it. And one of the anecdotes that they bring up during that is that apparently Sakamoto wrote the entire plot for the first game in the period of 3 hours on like a napkin.
I mean, that's how the best stories get written sometimes, you know, just stream of consciousness and then it works. It comes together. So good enough.
I fully believe that the plot of Other M was originally drafted on a napkin.
I think napkin is generous. Maybe the back of a business card that's already filled in. okay, so this one, you play largely as a orphan kind of guy.
Yes. Insert name here, Detective Boy.
Yeah, he does not have a... There's no canonical name. You basically give him whatever name that you can fit. Five characters as first and last name.
Right, I called mine, what was it? Dot Bick. That was my name. Yeah, you have to switch the letters around. But yeah, it was funny. And you basically just... Weird story, I think, because it's just like, you just meet a detective, and he's like, hey, want to be my apprentice?
The opening of the game basically frames it as your protagonist guy is running from the cops for some reason. Like, he identifies himself as being an orphan and a stray, so assumably he stole something Aladdin-style or whatever.
And maybe. It could just be illegal in Japan.
Maybe. And he gets picked up by a private detective who offers to give him a better life if, you know, he takes up his trade and he takes him up on that offer. So
it's a good choice. Who doesn't want to be a video game private detective? That's where it's cool to be a private detective.
Right?
This is where the police respect private detectives and they solve the cases for some reason. I really like that intro, by the way. Very classy. Very cool. Like, you've got the, you know, the flickering lights and, like, the torches are actually kind of animated and you've got, like, side running and all this, like, stuff that I don't usually expect to see.
It sets the mood pretty well, I think.
They did a really good job with this remake.
Yeah, like, I've got to assume, yeah, like, the FDS version probably was just a couple of static images, but really, really nice in this one. Because you don't see adventure games, either from Japan or in general, that have kind of that much motion for all the individual scenes. It's usually pretty static, so it's nice to see Nintendo put a decent amount of effort into the presentation, without it going, like, obviously, a modern adventure game, you can have full animated cutscenes, but this is kind of meeting it sort of halfway between, like, a little storybook animated comic sort of deal. So it's nice. I really like the style. But very rapidly, you have to investigate a murder. Your character seems surprised that he has to investigate a murder, and I'm like, why would you be surprised? You're a private detective who apparently investigates, like, everything, so doesn't seem like it would be a surprise to me, but... yeah, you get hooked into a murder case, and it's quite well written, I would say, like, because it loops into other cases that are going on, and you kind of go back and forth between other things, and there's a ghost story going on, and it ticks along at a nice pace, and pretty great, I think.
And basically just choreographs who the bad guy is immediately. Like, I knew who he was the first time I saw him. It's not well hidden.
Yeah. Well, the first time I did get a little bit caught, I guess I wasn't really paying attention, but I remember the first time I played through it, like when this first translation patch came out, I think like in 2003. So if it does, yeah, I could definitely see the person being like, I also don't want to spoil it, but yes.
Don't spoil too much, because this one's a nice, short, punchy game, so it's an easy recommendation. I think it's a really cool one to check out.
Yes, it is. I think in the playthroughs that I've done, I think it's taken me no less than 4 hours, but no more than six.
And it is a Japanese adventure game, which makes it very different to, say, a Western point-and-click, in that, for the most part, this one's... very considerate. You know, like, it'll only give you options that you can maybe do something with. It has the traditional Japanese adventure game emptying every single conversation topic, and you do have to, like, say, I'd like to talk to you about Yoko, and they will give you one line about Yoko, and so you say, I would like to talk about Yoko again, and they'll give you another line about Yoko, and you keep, you know, asking the same question until they finally give you the dot dot dot, or they loop, and you're like, okay, obviously I need to move
this
on
game
to a different...
definitely has a problem with the game wants you to do something, and that can be exhaust all conversation, you know, bring up the subject of one particular item, use a thing, or it can be something that you elsewise wouldn't use. Like, I remember one sequence where Ayumi Tachibana, who has a trophy in Smash Melee, it was probably the only reason anyone even knows about this game in the first place, gets, like, abducted by a guy, and there's, like, this standoff situation, and no matter what option you pick, it's incorrect until you pick the option that you would use to, like, save and quit, and that makes, like, your guy back off, and the other guy backs off. And it's like, mm-hmm. who the hell would think to do that?
I thought that was kind of clever. When
it is. And also, I can't remember if, because I know that there was another popular game of this type. I can't remember the full title of it, but something, it's like Hokkaido Serial Murders. It's another Yuji Horii.
Oh, yeah, the Portopia.
Yeah, I think that game pulls the same trick, and I can't remember if this game came before or after that.
Right, because I assume that trick is in the 1989 release as well.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I do actually like the quit option of this, not because of, yeah, I can understand you just exhaust all the options and eventually choose quit. I assume you're like, ah, clever, very cute. I do like quit in this one because it's actually just save, and it just opens the save screen, and then it's like, I smiled when I saw it because I'm like, oh, so they're just saying save your game and turn your system off. Like, you know, lots of games would give you the option to save, and then it would be like, just quit to title screen or something and be like, thanks game, like, that was really helpful, like, what am I going to do with this? But no, this one just, yeah, you're just basically... takes you to the save menu, which I thought was funny.
I wonder if they left it like that specifically for that one section.
I get the feeling that it must mean, like...
Because I remember from that section, it is nice when it comes to that, because I believe there's only, like, four options that you can do, so it's
there's,
not
like... There's,
like,
persuade, charge, and talk or something, and at some point they're like, I can't do that.
It's also something that might...
I'm a loser.
Well, I can understand, like, that's always when something gives you, like... think outside the box, but you kind of have to think outside the box outside of the game's rules that it's previously established, which is always hit or miss, depending on how you're sort of put things together. I do wonder if that one maybe made sense in Japanese a little bit more. I always get confused.
I wonder...
Yeah, like, the kanji or the word is a pun that doesn't really work in English, so you kind of trip over yourself sometimes.
Or
it happens.
I kind of wonder if maybe that it was actually meant to be, like, it just, in Japanese, was meant to more be save or something like that, rather than quit, because I don't even think it gives you an option to quit from there.
But yeah,
could be. Like, when I played this game, I've ran into a lot of those situations where, like, I was very clearly trying to do things that the game didn't want me to do, because I was figuring things out ahead of the narrative as it presented itself.
Yeah, this is a classic, like, Japanese adventure game issue.
And, like, there's a point, like, towards the end of the game, and I'm not going to spoil the details, but, like, your boss detective is, like, saying, oh, we got this evidence. Clearly it implicates this person. And I'm like, no, you moron. It's clearly not that guy. But you want me to say it's the wrong guy.
Like, the game, yeah, this is a general problem, because these games are always very much, like, to a script, in the sense that you are not, even this is a specific game, you get to name yourself, which is, you know, I'm never really comfortable with that in this kind of game, because you don't play as yourself. No way, no how.
Nope.
The character constantly talks, you have a think button, which is very common, and then the character basically, like, tells you what to do or infers what you need to do, mm-hmm. and you're not making your own choices, you're not solving things, you're just... The closest you get to solving things for the most part is this game has, like, a check option, where sometimes you'll be at, like, a crime scene or, like, a specific scene, and it wants you to use the check option to point at something on the screen, like, what about that? And then your character will be like, oh, yeah, there's that thing. But sometimes it's to get other characters to check, and it's like, what about this? And they're like, Oh, and it can be kind of tricky to shuffle what the game wants your character to think about in order to get another character to do something.
Oh, yeah, there's one part where you need to talk to this one woman, and it's pretty obvious that you need to try to get her to go to, like, the secluded second building.
Oh, yeah.
She's in a kind of public setting, but you need to, like, there's no way to communicate that to her until you've gone through all the options.
Yeah, like, it definitely does that. It's not surprising, because that's really how these games usually work, is you just basically... I didn't mind this one, because I did think often the conversation flows to an extent, and it's kind of, like, really arbitrary, because sometimes when you unlock a new conversation topic, it does a nice little jingle, it's like, bring, like you've got something, and then you can go, and it'll highlight it in yellow, and it's your new choice, and you pick it, and you feel really clever, and then other times, they'll reveal information, and nothing will happen, but you're like, oh, that sounds maybe like I needed to pick this other topic now, and then that will progress it. But sometimes
you need
to...
That plays anytime, like, you find, like, something suspicious or creepy comes up, but you never know which, because they use it for both.
Yeah, it's, you know, I can't get too annoyed at it, because frankly, this is a much better problem to have than having 15 inventory items and, like, 30 different screens and being like, all right, I got this piece of toast, I got a shark, and I got my shoes, and I gotta go work out which one of these I stick against something else. Here we go. It's definitely a bit more pleasant to get through. You don't really get stuck as such. You just kind of need to kind of, like, sometimes you have to do a bit of shuffling, but it's all right.
Yeah, I will say that I think that certain musical pieces of this game are its highlight, like the police station is my personal favorite.
Oh, I do like the music in this. I really, obviously I gotta come from Phoenix Wright, because it's one of the only, like, really investigation-y Japanese games I've also played. But I felt like, yeah, it's got that really nice, like, charming, like, music that really does, it's investigation, sounds like investigation. The locations have, like, cool sounds to them, and they all kind of feel distinctive and kind of evoke the place that you're in. I love the creepy music, which, like, is completely off-kilter. I always love that kind of just, like, weird music boxy kind of schizophrenic sound that the game cranks sometimes. Like, mm-hmm. great soundtrack to this one. I think it gets, like, remixed or something sometimes.
The theme that plays when you are kind of quote-unquote thinking, I think is kind of serves as the game's main, like, theme throughout the games. And I'm just thinking the only other place that I remember hearing it is in Rock Band 4 Minus Infinity. I know uses it as the password theme. That's all that I can remember.
So, yeah, I mean, anyone else have something they want to say specifically about this one, or anything about the Famicom Detective games?
I did read that Sakamoto was specifically inspired by Dario Argento movies, specifically Suspiria. And
you know, Suspiria
sequel.
And Dario Argento is just, like, such low-key, not always low-key, like, really inspirational in Japan. It's really strange I mean, I understand why, because I actually got a bunch of European movies for some reason, but really cool to see that kind of thing show up. It also explains basically the intro. Boy, did Dario Argento like strangling women. That was definitely one of his things.
Oh, yeah, I guess.
Yeah, always the mysterious death, someone who's been strangled in some unusual fashion. That is... trademark Dario Argento. Actually, it's a little bit just Giallo, like the genre he worked in, like very, very, very common, like that just sort of random strangulation.
I remember when I played this and, like, they have you do, like, the initial inspection on the corpse. Like, I told the game to inspect this corpse because, like, maybe this is that kind of crime. And then, like, the police started yelling at me for being a creep. I'm like, I'm a detective. I need to check this.
I thought that was funny. Like, yeah, like, you're just like, I know that you're young and full of hormones, but please. And it's
like, no, I'm a professional. Fuck off.
There is actually only one instance in this game in which you can see a game over screen, and it is when you are actually at the police station. When you first go in there, there is, like, a lady, or, like, there's a woman there that's, like, assisting you through the station, and you have a command there that basically gives you a little pointer finger that you can go on the screen. And if you point at the place that you could imagine that something like this would happen, she says... Or something, I forgot exactly what she says, but a little game over screen will appear, and she'll say, eh, just kidding.
So they pull the Monkey Island thing on you.
Yeah.
So it's the reverse Neverhood.
I did want to kind of bring up one thing that I kind of felt, especially playing it nowadays, kind of puts me off it a little bit, and that's actually the fan translation of this game. Because for the most part, it actually did a really good job. The people who worked on it were Clive Mandolin, aka Tomato, did some work on it, not the main work, but it was mostly done by a group called Demiforce, I believe is the name of it.
Yeah, they add themselves as graffiti in the game.
The thing with they kind of felt like they added some stuff to it that I kind of felt like I know one of the characters, name of Hitomi, mentions like busting a cap in your ass at one point. Also, there's kind of some blatant transphobia in it, which is not great.
That's not great.
It's with like that one ugly girl, right?
There is an ugly girl where they use an incredibly not good term to describe her at one point, and I'm like, oh god, I really always dread, like, I've streamed this several times and I always dread getting to that point, because it's like,
I'm not gonna jump on backwards. Like the strict translation thing, but do you know if that was used in the Japanese original? Because Japanese stuff can be really transphobic sometimes. Like,
I can almost guarantee that the term they use is not in the original Japanese.
Yeah, when it comes to certain, especially character types, like they're like, even when I try to translate this stuff, I'm like, is this offensive? Like, even the source material is not good.
Because I'm not trying to defend the use. I just know that I would probably, you know, I would even off the translation, since obviously characters in this have been evened off or, you know, altered. Like, you know, like a character, one of the ones is like, you try and talk to him, he says sup. Like, they don't say sup. They say something else, you know?
Yeah. The thing I have with the translation is the translation of the subtitle, the girl in back, which is wrong.
Yeah.
But they do it because it needs to fit into the window, so it needs to be small enough.
Yeah,
it doesn't sound right in English.
No, it doesn't.
Because they also refer to it, like, they use a different term for it. I remember it's
Didn't they call it, like, the girl who stands behind or something?
Yes,
that's the more proper translation of it.
The fan translation does use the girl who in the back or something, which is that doesn't fit at all. But yeah, like, it is because you've got, like, you have to keep referring to her as girl in back, I think, is the...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I can understand that they just had to do that.
For people who, I guess, could speak Japanese, the full title of this name, and it's also the name of the thing, is Famicom Tantai Club Part 2 Ushiro no... Ushiro ni Tatsu Sojo. I believe.
Yeah. So Ushiro behind, Tatsu stand, and then Shoujo girl.
So, yeah, I think it's just one of those things where it's the Japanese, it's probably more elegant sounding in Japan, like, I guess if you understand Japanese, whereas if you're trying to say that exact thing in English, it's really hard to kind of
It's really long, yeah.
It's not inelegant, but it probably is, like, literally that. It just makes more sense in Japanese. Yeah, I mean, I would still recommend the game, by the way. I guess especially
if you're
prepared for the little curveball of the translation. I thought otherwise the translation was pretty damn solid. Like, it reads well. Good stuff in that regard.
I don't, like, outside of that, and, like, as I said, like, I played this, you know, like, 10 years ago. I just remember a lot of it very distinctly. I don't remember that, like, at the time, because, you know, I get transphobia every damn day. If I remembered every little instance of it, you know, I'd never get anywhere. Yeah. But, you know, like, that would definitely throw me off way more today than it did 10 years ago. But outside of that, I don't remember the translation ever having any issue where I'm just like, what the hell are you trying to tell me? Or something like that.
No, it's pretty good. You know, like, I mean, it's a 1998 Japanese, like, Super Famicom game. There's gonna be some residual, I think. We're probably gonna have to rank this one before we get too long in the conversation here. I think this is gonna be tricky again. I think we had pretty easy rankings the last few ones that we've done here. Nice clean easy rankings, but this one. It's an adventure game, talkie-talkie game. Like, it's always tough to measure those against games where you do a lot.
I was looking at the list earlier, and I did see... I was kind of looking for kind of points, and I did see that Yumi Nikki was on here, Snatcher's on here. I would definitely not put this above Yumi Nikki, because I felt like that's more of a better adventure than this is.
Yumi Nikki is kind of special because I really put it as high as we did when I was on that one, just because it really did kind of inspire a specific kind of subgenre. Like, people really got behind this sort of just creepy out explorer-y horror kind of game. Like, I thought it was really cool, and the lack of combat was clever. So yeah, like, I feel that it's probably not quite that high. It is really well executed, though, and I do really appreciate that this game, it is a little older, and what I appreciate about that means is that it's not like, it's not covered in twists. It's not like a billion twists. It's not standing up entirely on twists. It's just like a nice, relatively like well-told story, which has its twists and turns, but just feels like a murder investigation with some other stuff going on. And I do like that. I like that it's just like, you know, it's enjoyable without going too crazy in any direction.
Yeah.
So my take on this is I would put it underneath Police Knots because this is a linear adventure game that's really a visual novel in disguise that has its plot points a little too transparent.
As I say, also, if you're going on that, I do see Snatcher is also directly underneath that, and I probably would
put it above Snatcher. Oh, yeah, I should be putting it under Snatcher. What am I talking about?
Yeah, those are both better. I don't know if there's any other Japanese adventure games. Like, even Phoenix Wright, like, I started playing these sort of games under the impression they were sort of like Phoenix Wright, and they're not.
No, not really. This is actually one, as I said, this is one of the closer ones to Phoenix Wright, because you do a little bit of investigation. You know, you do actually... It, you know, like, you go onto the screen and actually, like, poke around some, like, crime scenes and stuff. Like,
you don't need to do it that often. But at the same time, there's a, you know, in Hotel Dusk at the end of each chapter where you would get, like, quizzes.
Yeah. Oh, that's right.
There's a couple of those in here.
That is in the Super Famicom version. Yeah, you've got the notebook.
Are you paying attention checklist?
Yeah. And it doesn't fail you out if you mess those up either, which is nice. It's just like, hey.
And it's a good thing because I kept putting in the answers to the correct case as opposed to the answers the game wanted me to put.
Well, oh, that does remind me though. That was actually the only time the translation really slipped up for me because I think it was the limited space that they had. They kind of phrased things in a way that kind of threw me off. Like the way it phrased it kind of suggested to me that they were talking about the person that did it rather than the person that it was done to. So I answered it the wrong way and it's like, no, that's not it at all. I'm like, I had to reread that like 6 times to get that that's what it actually meant. I do like the way that you do have the little memo book, but that's only in the Super Famicom release. Also cool, for anyone that takes long breaks between games, when you reload your save, it actually does say, hey, would you like a summary from the notebook about what's happened in the case? Which I thought was a nice little feature. I really can't see someone taking that long a break because it's not that long, but nice little feature, I think, in the Super Famicom version to have that just a little bit. Hey, do you remember what was going on last time you played? Always like to see that in there.
It was really nice, actually. That feature actually really helped me out because I streamed that game like in August, I believe, like at the tail end of August, and I actually used that feature because I was loading the game back up, and I'm like, oh yeah. Like, oh, hey, I could actually show, like, if you were not there, because I did it in 2 streams. It's like, oh, hey, here's what we happened last time, so...
That's a bonus point. Really consider it to the Twitch streaming audience from...
Yes.
almost 30 years, but 20 for this release.
It's really good foresight.
Oh, yeah. No, it's pretty solid. I do like Snatcher a lot, so... Yeah, this is more like, this isn't a mock against the game's quality, it's that this is kind of a game list, so you really have to bring the business to get super high when you're just, effectively are a visual novel, for the most part. Alright, well, around Snatcher, directly below it we've got Kirby's Dream Land 3, that's at what I believe is 226, and below that is Robot Alchemaic Drive at 227. Anyone got any feeling around these? What's the...
Unfortunately, I'm not familiar with Robot Alchemic Drive. I kind of would almost put Kirby's Dream Land 3 above it, though.
I mean, if we're talking ideals here, I'd put this below Super Mario Kart.
I'm just seeing ZZT, and for some reason, whenever I just see ZZT, I'm like, okay, is Famicom Detective Club better or worse than Burger Joint? Because
that is a hard question.
Burger Joint is great. Honestly, if Burger Joint didn't exist, ZZT would have been lower. I gotta tell you, like, Burger Joint is a hell of a, like, conceptual experiment. That.
I adore the hell out of ZZT.
Yeah, I mean, like,
I would probably, of the ones that's below that's actually catching my eye, this is mainly because I don't know what Magister Magic is, I'm thinking above, right above Wendy Every Which Way.
Okay. I'm feeling
I imagine Xerxes would object to that and say, no, put it under that and put it over Jet Force Gemini.
At least above Jet Force Gemini.
You know what?
I can jive with above Jet Force Gemini. That's the point where we're actually hitting things on this list where I'm like, no, I would actually rather play this than that.
Yeah, like, Jet Force Gemini actually does the thing that I was complaining about, because you have to go fetch every goddamn thing in the universe to get through that final door, don't you? This does the opposite of that, so kudos to that. It's got to go above Jet Force Gemini, I think that's fair enough. So somewhere in that region, so we're between... Yeah, okay, so but somewhere between ZZT and Jet Force Gemini, I think that's fair enough. So we got to work it out here.
I am open pretty much any of those spaces.
So
yeah, I don't feel strongly either way.
Well, if nobody feels strongly, it's going below Master of Magic because I love Master of Magic.
Okay. Oh no!
I'll take your word for it.
Below Wendy every which way.
Below is it's all right. I know why it's the witch thing. Got a real.
Well,
witch
no,
fan
just
in
because Wendy like, exactly what I was saying before. Like I would rather play Wendy every which way. I would not rather play Jet Force Gemini.
It is a pretty good game.
Okay, well, I did like Wendy every which way, so as I said, as long as it's below Master of Magic, that's fine with me. So, all right, let's do that. Like, no complaints, and I don't care what anyone else says who's listening. We're going to put it there. look, if we can, as much as we needed to, we would never, it would be a rough show, I tell you. So, it's going in at 236, and that's, above Jet Force Gemini, the N64 collect-a-thon classic until you have to collect everything, and below Wendy Every Which Way, which is a very cutesy, fun little witch-based platformer for the Game Boy Color. Also, I think you can play it in the Game Boy Advance for a bonus.
You get an extra bonus world.
Which is always a nice feature. You know what happens if you put this cart in your Switch? Breaks everything! It's ridiculous! Can't stand that. I tried to fit it in the cot slot, now I got crap all over the floor. It's just the worst.
What were you trying to do? Lick it?
I'm gonna go get a SNES cartridge of this game and lick it, and then I'll rank it compared to the Switch version of, what have I got here? Hyrule Warriors. That's what I'll compare it to, so we'll do that. Give a taste contest between... Famicom Detective Club, except it's not actually, this game never had a proper release, right? It was just loaded on the power cut.
Yep.
So, can't even taste that game. Can never taste this game. So, that's where it's going. 236, Famicom Detective Club 2. Do check it out. It's actually pretty fun. Worth your 3 hours or 4 hours.
That's all for this episode. Special thanks goes out to our lovely co-hosts and compatriots, our booking agent Jeff Rude, our theme song MC Norm, check him out at Normally Retro on Twitter, and our technical assistant, video editor, and scriptwriter Ed Burns. You can support this podcast by making a small monthly donation at patreon.com/HG101. I know, I did. By subscribing to the HG101 YouTube channel, and by following at GC9X and at HG_101 on Twitter. You can also hang out with us at our Discord channel. It's at bit.ly/HG Discord, but most importantly, help us spread the love of games by getting on iTunes, subscribing to HG101, and giving us a 5-star review. Do it because you like us and you want us to succeed. Until next time, keep keeping it real.